Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. Good morning. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And, of course, big news in the legal struggles over Donald Trump. And yesterday, the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland named Jack Smith a war crimes prosecutor to serve as special counsel. He will oversee the Justice Department investigation related to Donald Trump, including the former president's handling of sensitive documents and investigations surrounding the January 6th riots at Capitol Hill. And this is Merrick Garland speaking yesterday.
Based on recent developments, including the former president's announcement that he is a candidate for president in the next election, and the sitting president's stated intention to be a candidate as well, I have concluded that it is in the public interest to appoint a special counsel.
And the Attorney General continued in that press conference, didn't take any questions, but he was kind of laying out how the investigation would proceed.
I am confident that this appointment will not slow the completion of these investigations. And I also believe that appointing a special counsel at this time is the right thing to do. The extraordinary circumstances presented here demand it.
Now, it's not only relating, as we mentioned, to Mar-a-Lago. It relates to January 6th, and here's how the Attorney General explained that component.
The investigation into whether any person or entity unlawfully interfered with the transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election or with the certification of the Electoral College vote held on or about January 6th. This does not include prosecutions that are currently pending in the District of Columbia or future investigations and prosecutions of individuals for offenses committed while they were physically present on the Capitol grounds on January 6th. Those investigations and prosecutions will remain under the authority of the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia.
Now, that was the announcement from Merrick Garland, and of course the big question was, the administration aware of it or not? And this is Corinne Jean-Pierre answering that question in a White House briefing yesterday afternoon.
Was the president aware of the attorney general's decision to name a special counsel?
So just first, I can just tell you, no, he was not aware. We were not aware. As you know, the Department of Justice makes decisions about its criminal investigation independently. We are not involved. We have not been aware about this particular investigation or any criminal investigation.
Well, the former president was speaking at a black tie fundraiser in Florida last night, and here's how former President Trump reacted to the announcement. And again, this was last night.
This horrendous abuse of power is the latest in a long series of witch hunts. It started a long time ago. I thought the investigation with the document hoax was dying or dead or over, and the investigation into January 6th, in my very peaceful and patriotic speech, remember, peaceful and patriotically, was dead, especially after the record-setting 40-point loss of Liz Cheney in the great state of Wyoming. I thought it was dead.
Well, he continued.
They want to do bad things to the greatest movement in the history of our country, but in particular, bad things to me, but I've gotten used to it.
So that's former President Trump speaking last night. Now, the announcement coming 3 days after former President Trump announcing he would run for president again in 2024, and Garland saying, of course, that Trump's candidacy, as well as Democratic President Biden's stated intention to run for re-election, made the appointment of a special counsel necessary. Special counsel is Jack Smith. He made a statement. This was a statement he released last night. The pace of the investigations will not pause or flag under my watch. I will exercise independent judgment and will move the investigations forward expeditiously and thoroughly to whatever outcome the facts and the law dictate. Smith will oversee the investigation into the handling of the government documents after leaving the White House last year. And, of course, as we'd mentioned earlier, the relationship of former President Trump to the events on Capitol Hill on January 6th. Now, this is what legal expert Jonathan Turley had to say about it yesterday on Fox, and this was relating to some of the criticism of how the Attorney General is handling this.
As a threshold matter, I think there is a valid criticism here that Attorney General Garland, in making the case for a special counsel, made the case against himself for the failure to appoint a special counsel on Hunter Biden. You know, he said, well, look, we've got someone running for president. We really can't investigate this as a member of the current president's administration. Well, you also have an investigation of the current president's family, an investigation where the president could be implicated in a multi-million dollar influence peddling scheme, an investigation that has references to President Biden using code names like the big guy and other code names to hide the fact that they were talking about Joe Biden. And he has steadfastly refused to appoint a special counsel, and it's simply baffling. Now, the Mar-a-Lago aspect of this investigation is where I would be most concerned as counsel for former President Trump. The Attorney General mentioned obstruction a couple of times. There are statements that were given to the FBI as part of their investigation that the FBI insists were not just untrue, but knowingly untrue. So what you're most concerned about in an investigation like this is that the FBI often starts with low-lying fruit. And so all of those obstruction claims involved other people, lawyers, staff, etc. That's probably where the special counsel is going to start.
Reuters reporting that Jack Smith, the independent counsel, is a political independent, until recently serving as the chief prosecutor for the special court in The Hague. He's been tasked with prosecuting war crimes in Kosovo. He previously oversaw the Justice Department's public integrity section and worked as a federal and state prosecutor in New York. That is the special counsel, Jack Smith. It's 6:17. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up on the program, of course, we will talk with Jim Trusty, a partner at IFRA Law, member of the Trump legal team. We've got Jennifer Harper on the way from the Washington Times. John Gizzi, our White House correspondent, chief political columnist, will be with us in the 7 o'clock hour. Of course, many, many political developments this week. We'll be talking about, of course, Speaker Pelosi stepping down. Steny Hoyer will not be seeking a leadership position next year in the Democratic Party. Kevin McCarthy looks like he's on the way to become the Speaker of the House, but there could be a hurdle or two yet there. And, of course, former President Trump's big announcement that he will run once again for president in 2024. All of that coming up. We've got Cheryl Atkinson on the way. We'll be chatting with Cheryl about some serious, serious fraud in the COVID-19 payouts, of course, in the stimulus packages, billions of dollars wasted there. Tony Schaefer joins us, and we will be talking to KT McFarland. So lots to come on the Saturday Morning Update. But right now, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Virginia side of the Beltway, Outer Loop in McLean. Accident. Two center lanes are blocked approaching Georgetown Pike. Also on the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, it's jammed up between the Clara Barton Parkway and the 495 express lanes. In Prince George's County on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is a serious crash at Ritchie Marlboro Road. Follow police direction around the crash scene. And in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, no crashes or construction. Lanes are clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Moving through the remainder of the morning hours and into the afternoon, plenty of sunshine with temperatures only reaching the 40s, well below average for this time of year. Overnight, clear and cold, dropping down to the 20s, increasing winds upwards of 20 miles per hour. A cold and blustery day tomorrow with lots of sunshine, 35 to 40 degrees, wind chill factors in the teens and 20s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
6:19, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday Morning Update continues, and as we mentioned, the former president making a big announcement earlier this week that he would run for re-election, and it caused a flurry of media activity
a flurry of media criticism and even ridicule from some areas of the media. But two of the key Republicans put it in perspective for us, and these are two names that have been talked about as potential presidential candidates and somewhat voices of reason in the Republican Party. And one of them is the New Hampshire governor. It is Chris Sununu. And here's how he responded when he was asked about the president's announcement.
Won't clear the field. He's really making an announcement at one of his weakest political points, right? I mean, we just got crushed in this election. There's still going to be a lot of folks that enter this race, probably not until late 23. A lot of things are going to change politically between now and then. So we still have a long way to go before anything really serious starts moving in terms of 2024.
And a second governor who was very prominent in the Republican Party these days, of course, Ron DeSantis of Florida. And President Trump has taken a few shots at Ron DeSantis, including coming up with a nickname, Ron DeSanctimonious. But the governor of Florida has not taken the bait. And, of course, obviously, he was asked about former President Trump's announcement this week. And here's how Ron DeSantis responded.
Now, look, I think we just finished this election. OK, people just need to chill out a little bit on some of this stuff. I mean, seriously, we just ran an election. We have this Georgia runoff coming, which is very important for Republicans to win that Georgia runoff.
Indeed it is. And as you know, the Republicans have got the House now. Officially, they have been declared the winners of the House of Representatives. So Kevin McCarthy took one vote this week, which will move him closer to becoming the Speaker of the House. Could get a little interesting if he cannot get all of the Republicans behind him, and that could be tricky. But the Democrats could get behind Hakeem Jeffries or another candidate for Speaker of the House. If the Democrats all vote together and the Republicans split their votes up, could have a Democratic Speaker of the House. A little crazy. We'll get into some detail with John Gizzi about that later on this morning. But Kevin McCarthy was on earlier in the week, and here's how he kind of laid out the Republican agenda as they take over the House of Representatives.
One-party Democrat rule in Washington is finished. We have fired Nancy Pelosi. On day one in this House, we will repeal 87,000 new IRS agents. We want to know the origins of where COVID began so we never have that happen again. We want to know what happened in the last 60 days of Afghanistan. Why did the DOJ go after parents and call them terrorists? How can we have a Secretary of Homeland calling that this border is secure when you have more than 2.7 individuals illegally coming across?
So you get an idea where the Republicans are headed. Now, I mentioned earlier that Steny Hoyer, longtime congressman from the state of Maryland, will not be seeking a leadership position next week. He was asked about it.
It's always good for a party to have new blood and new invigoration, enthusiasm, and new ideas. But I think it's time. You know, you might not have heard, I'm 83.
So that, of course, is the Congressman from Maryland, a fixture in the House of Representatives, Steny Hoyer. And as you know, Speaker Pelosi has said that she will be stepping down from her speakership and will continue to serve in the Congress as it looks now, but will not be seeking any leadership positions in the Democratic Party. And here's how she explained it on the floor of the House.
And with great confidence in our caucus, I will not seek re-election to Democratic leadership in the next Congress. For me, the hour has come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus that I so deeply respect. And I'm grateful that so many are ready and willing to shoulder this awesome responsibility.
That, of course, is Speaker Pelosi as she announces that she will be stepping down from Democratic leadership. Now, we mentioned a bit about the Republican agenda, and the first committee to have a press briefing was the Oversight Committee. Made a lot of headlines, and James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, is the head of the Republican Oversight Committee press briefing that they did.
At a time when Americans are suffering from high energy prices because of
this administration's terrible energy policy. We find evidence that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were involved in a scheme to try to get China to buy liquefied natural gas, and from a whistleblower to try to get their foot in the door with China starting to purchase an interest in natural gas drillers. Now, people are in outrage over China buying farmland in the Dakotas. What about China starting to buy into our American energy industry at a time when we have an energy crisis because of the bad policies of the Biden administration?
And that, of course, is James Comer. And later that day, Congressman Comer was on CNN, speaking of the Hunter Biden investigations.
There's no plans to subpoena Joe Biden. There are plans to subpoena Hunter Biden.
And what does that timeline look like?
Well, I mean, you know, if I were Hunter Biden, Pam, I would want to come before my committee and prove my innocence. You know, because I said some things today that should be very concerning to Hunter Biden.
Why then would you not subpoena Joe Biden if this is all about Joe Biden?
Well, it's complicated to subpoena a president of the United States.
But it has been done with
several
presidents.
It has been done, and the Democrats sent out subpoenas like junk mail, and that's why it's hard to get people to come in.
So that's just a look at some of the action in Washington and in politics this week. I will leave you on this note for this segment of the program. As you do your Thanksgiving holiday shopping over the weekend, as you go to the gas station to fill up that tank, maybe you're taking a long drive over the holiday weekend, maybe you've purchased an airline ticket recently, here's how the president sums up the economy as of yesterday. This is President Biden speaking of the economy. Think about this when you open your next heating bill.
Look, we're talking about real money here to save people, and it's just going to start kicking in now. By taking action, we're making real progress in strengthening and stabilizing our economy, giving Americans across the country some breathing room.
Have you had any breathing room yet? I certainly haven't. 627, this is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll check the news next, and then we'll get with Jennifer Harper. Jim Trustee's coming up, as well as John Gizzi, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Cheryl Atkinson, and KT McFarland on the Saturday Morning Update. And in the news, Attorney General Merrick Garland on Friday appointing a special counsel to oversee the criminal investigations into the retention of national defense information at Mar-a-Lago and also parts of the January 6th riots at Capitol Hill. Both investigations include the conduct of Trump, who on Tuesday declared his candidacy in the 2024 presidential race, making him a potential rival of President Joe Biden. A 22-year-old Los Angeles area man who authorities believe intentionally crashed into a group of law enforcement recruits was released from custody Thursday evening. The L.A. County Sheriff, Alex Villanueva, said the suspect was only released until investigators can develop more evidence and present a stronger case for prosecutors. And winter is already here in the Buffalo, New York area. As of 5 o'clock last night, the National Weather Service had posted snowfall totals of 54 inches in Orchard Park, 48 inches in Blaisdell and Elma, and 41 in East Aurora, all of these in Erie County in the Buffalo, New York area. They expect that Buffalo should have had over an additional 1 to 2 feet before sunrise this morning. It's 6:34. This is the Saturday Morning Update, and LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Silver Spring on Georgia Avenue, lanes are closed right now between 410 and Colesville Road for the Silver Spring Thanksgiving Parade. On the outer loop of the Beltway in Prince George's County, accident has been moved to the left shoulder right at Ritchie Marlboro Road. On the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, it's jammed up between the Clara Barton Parkway and the 495 Express Lanes. And on the outer loop of the Beltway in McLean, there is a crash. Two center lanes are blocked approaching Georgetown Pike. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Moving through the remainder of the morning hours and into the afternoon, plenty of sunshine with temperatures only reaching the 40s, well below average for this time of year. Overnight, clear and cold, dropping down to the 20s, increasing winds upwards of 20 miles per hour. A cold and blustery day tomorrow with lots of sunshine, 35 to 40 degrees. Wind chill factors in the teens and 20s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
29 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:35 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. We are joined by Jennifer Harper. She, of course, writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. And how are you?
Oh, lots of changes in Washington we're trying to stay up with. Nancy Pelosi, the current Speaker of the House, passes the gavel. And, of course, it always comes with controversy.
Well, it does, certainly, and it was one of those larger-than-life events that we love to cover. But anyway, if you looked at the coverage of CNN and The Hill, they all declared that this event was the end of an era. And so I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. But it also inspired me to look at the beginning of the era, like when Mrs. Pelosi first House Speaker Pelosi, pardon me, or former House Speaker, but anyway, it prompted me to look at what happened on her first day when she took the job. And we're going to take that march back in time, everybody, and the date was January the 4th, 2007. And this was the occasion when then Representative Nancy Pelosi gave a speech upon her election as Speaker of the House. And Representative John Boehner, you remember him, he's Ohio Republican, and he was the House Minority Leader at the time. And he handed Mrs. Pelosi the ceremonial House gavel for the occasion. And here is what she said. This is a reminder of what she started out as. She said, "I accept this gavel in a spirit of partnership, not partisanship, and I look forward to working with you, Mr. Boehner, and the Republicans in the Congress on behalf of the American people." She went on to say, "In this house, we may belong to different parties, but we serve one country. We stand united in our pride and prayers for our men and women in the armed forces. They are working together to protect America, and we, in this house, must also work together to build a future worthy of their sacrifice." Yes, that was Nancy Pelosi speaking on January 4th, 2007.
How times change. So former President Trump, the official announcement Tuesday night that he will run for president in 2024. Media had a heyday with that now, didn't they?
Oh, yes, indeed they did. They were very predictably very crabby and critical about the whole thing. And I've got a couple of headlines that followed in the 24 hours after Mr. Trump made his big announcement. And here some of them are. The 51 most outlandish lines from Donald Trump's announcement speech that came from CNN. MSNBC declared Trump's 24 announcement shockingly low energy. The New York Times advised Trump announces 2024 run, repeating lies and exaggerating his record. And just one more here. The Guardian said that Trump's speech was full of exaggerated and false talking points. So it kind of looks like they all were on the exaggeration and false talking points bandwagon. There was one positive headline that came out, and that was with the Federalist. They said Trump won't be defeated by the media. But one more thing, Rick. How do you think our listeners may think about whether they actually want Trump and Biden to run? There's a poll out there about that coming to us from our friends at Politico and Morning Consult, and they have a national tracking poll that find that 65% of the respondents believe that both the president and the former president should definitely or probably not run in 2024. Mm. So that's about two-thirds are saying, please don't run this time. But anyway, should either one of them throw their hat in the race when the time comes? Mr. Trump wins by one percentage point here. Here's the rest of the poll. The survey also found, Rick, that 31% of the voters think that Mr. Trump should definitely or probably run in 2024, and 30% say that Mr. Biden should definitely or probably run and seek re-election. And that was a voter poll, and it was conducted November 10 through 14.
You know, there is one branch of the service that we don't hear too much about in the media. That is the U.S. Coast Guard. They're embarking on a very interesting journey.
Yes, they do. I often follow them a great deal. They do so much that we don't hear about in terms of rescuing people and busting drug runners and everything else. But this is a great, this is an adventure, and they have taken out their heavy icebreaker. This is the U.S. Coast Guard cutter polar star, and it has already departed from Seattle, and it is bound, Rick, for Antarctica. This is in support of Operation Deep Freeze. This is a joint military service mission. That's what they essentially do is to resupply all the Antarctic stations down there with the National Science Foundation and other locations. And this is what the Coast Guard told me. The Polar Star crew conducts this essential mission to create a navigable path through ice as thick as 21 feet. Think about that. And they also allow some refueling and resupply ships to reach the McMurdo station way down there. And according to Captain Keith Rapella, he is the commanding officer of the Polar Star. He said, this is a unique and important mission that the Coast Guard undertakes each year. It takes a special crew to make the 20,000 nautical mile round trip through some of the most remote locations and arduous conditions on the planet to get the job done, and perhaps more significantly, to prepare this 46-year-old cutter for the challenge. I am overwhelmed and immensely proud of the tireless work this crew and our shoreside support partners have done. And again, that is the Coast Guard cutter Polar Star. It has three aviation-grade gas turbine engines, and it gives this heroic vessel, Rick, 75,000 horsepower. So there you go. That's the power of the Coast Guard, folks.
Well, how's the power of the dollar this Thanksgiving season as people will be out shopping for turkey and trimmings? What to expect?
Oh, well, just what we've been experiencing for quite some time now. This is according to the actual Republican National Committee. Got so excited about the ever-rising prices. They did an entire research project on Thanksgiving dinner. Here is what they found. The cost of the traditional Thanksgiving meal is up by 13.5% from a year ago. And this is from an analytical firm called IRI Worldwide. They say 38% of consumers expect to pay more this year than they did last year. The price of turkey is up by 17%. Thanksgiving staples like eggs, butter, and flour are up by 43%, 34%, and 25%. They point out that for the first time ever, it may be cheaper to dine out than prepare a meal at home for your friends and family. Restaurant prices certainly are up by 9%, they say. And you're hearing some of these things about some people are going to have a pizza party. At least I've heard about some of that. And one troubling little finding, this is coming from Personal Capital, an industry source. They say 88% of Americans plan to eliminate at least one traditional family dish from their Thanksgiving menu to save money. And so what's on the menu this Thanksgiving dinner? Well, it's higher prices. And President Biden's inflationary agenda is also wreaking havoc on our wallets this season. So that's according to our friends at the Republican National Committee.
You know, we often hear about the bias in the media, particularly the liberal bias in the media. And you found out something interesting on that this week.
Yeah, this is a real eye-opener. This is a very unique study that has come out from our good pals over at newsbusters.org, a conservative press watchdog. A lot of folks know who they are. And they decided to gauge what the political calling is of the late-night hosts that we know and maybe love to hate or hate to love, whatever they are. Anyway, are they liberals? Well, my gosh, yes, they are very, very liberal. This is according to this very meticulous research that Newsbusters came up with. Here's what they have to say. The late-night comedy scene has been reliably liberal for a long time, but the 2022 midterm election was a regular messaging machine for the Democrats. The study found that during the fall political campaign, this is from Labor Day through Monday night, through Election Day almost, liberal guests outnumbered conservative guests 47-0 on all the late-night shows. That means they were 100% liberal or Democrat. This is according to Newsbusters. They did a thorough undertaking. They looked at the six most well-known late-night comedy shows. That would be Jimmy Kimmel Live, Late Night with Seth Meyers, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, The Late Late Show with James Corden, and Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. And if you're worried, Gutfeld on Fox News late night offering, that was not included in this study. And some of the guests, they said, fell into two categories, either partisan officials or a mix of liberal journalists and celebrities. A couple of the folks that did appear in this 100% liberal-leaning presentations late night, Vice President Kamala Harris, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, Texas Democratic gubernatorial nominee Beto O'Rourke, New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman, CNN anchor Anderson Cooper, Hillary Clinton, and Chelsea Clinton. There were just a few that appeared. And if you're curious about this very unique and very well-done study, you can go to newsbusters.org and find all the guests and the methodology that they use. It's very unique research, and a round of applause for them.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You have a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving everything, everybody. Have a good one.
All righty. 6:46 Saturday morning update. Jim Trusty next. First, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is a crash. Two center lanes are blocked in McLean. That's approaching Georgetown Pike. Also, on the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, you're going to find it jammed up between Clara Barton Parkway and the Dulles Toll Road. In Montgomery County on Georgia Avenue, you're going to find it closed between 410 and Colesville Road for the Silver Spring Thanksgiving Parade. And in D.C., no delays on 295, 395, or 695. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Moving through the remainder of the morning hours and into the afternoon, plenty of sunshine with temperatures only reaching the 40s, well below average for this time of year. Overnight, clear and cold, dropping down to the 20s, increasing winds upwards of 20 miles per hour. A cold and blustery day tomorrow with lots of sunshine, 35 to 40 degrees, wind chill factors in the teens and 20s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the First Alert Weather Center.
29 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:47 on the Saturday morning update. It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty is with us. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Sure thing. Good morning.
Well, a lot of headlines on the Donald Trump legal front this week, and if you can walk us through what happened earlier in the week, then, of course, developments on Friday.
We have an oral argument that's been expedited in Atlanta in front of the 11th Circuit that has been set for Tuesday, and this is the government appealing Judge Cannon's appointment of a special master. So the government asked for an expedited hearing. I think, honestly, I thought it would probably be December or January, but instead we have the most heavily traveled day in America at the most heavily used airport in America, Atlanta, on Tuesday. But we'll show up and we'll have argument in front of the circuit. And then the other thing that's scheduled, which really relates to that idea of the special master, is a follow-up hearing in Brooklyn on December 1st in front of Judge Deary, where the parties expect to go through the various categorizations of documents that were seized from the Mar-a-Lago home of President Trump. So the bigger news was really Friday afternoon with the Attorney General appointing special counsel, a gentleman named Jack Smith. Jack is a former prosecutor from Brooklyn. He's spent a good part of his career bouncing back and forth between the U.S. and The Hague, where he prosecuted some war crime cases. I got to know him when he was at Maine Justice at the Public Integrity Section, and then afterward when he moved down to Nashville and eventually was the acting U.S. attorney for a while in the Middle District of Tennessee, U.S. Attorney's Office. He's a very experienced guy. He's certainly a tough litigator. He's comfortable trying cases. I think there's two things that, you know, are kind of important from the outside looking in about how Jack Smith will conduct himself as a special counsel. The first is, at least as of today, it doesn't seem very clear what kind of infrastructure he'll bring with him. You remember, when the Mueller team started up, they literally recruited from different locations, mostly within the Department of Justice, and created this investigative team to go after President Trump. Right now, because we're kind of midstream in the investigation, it's not really clear whether Jack will bring a number of people in or if he just absorbs people working on it now. So that'll be one thing that's kind of interesting to see about a special counsel and whether he populates kind of management or rank and file or if he accepts what's already out there.
Jim, help us to understand the relationship of a special counsel to the Department of Justice and the Attorney General. The goal is independence. So how does that work?
They do have a measure of independence, and as we all know from the Mueller probe and presumably from the way the Durham probe will end up, they also have an obligation to kind of to create a report that will go to the Attorney General and to Congress regarding their findings, and that's in the absence of an indictment. So it's a little different than a typical U.S. attorney or any sort of federal prosecutor, but the special counsel under the statute we use now still reports to the Attorney General. So at the end of the day, if you remember, the Mueller probe ended with a report going up to Rod Rosenstein and Bill Barr, and the two of them deciding there was no obstruction case to proceed upon, and there was no Russian collusion by all accounts. Well, you might have a similar process here where Jack Smith will be the lead of a group of prosecutors that still report to the Attorney General ultimately. So if you're hoping that the special counsel appointment means that you have almost a completely independent chain of command, that's just not how it works. There's still tie-in to the Department of Justice. It's a little bit of operational autonomy that he has compared to other U.S. attorneys.
I want to follow up on a case we've talked about before, Jim, and that was in New York where an attorney threw a Molotov cocktail at an empty police car. It was during the George Floyd protests, and there have been some developments in that case. They received a pretty stiff sentence, but what's the latest there?
Yeah, very interesting this week, and really the procedure is what's interesting, which I'll get to in just a sec. Ms. Rahman was a public interest lawyer, as they call it, which basically means various left-wing causes. She was very well known for that, and she pled guilty initially earlier this year to a 10-year felony charge dealing with her possession of a Molotov cocktail, which seems like kind of the appropriate charge. There was an open issue about the sentencing guidelines, which are that those kinds of ranges that are established for judges to at least consider when passing a sentence. And the issue is whether the terrorism enhancement would apply, which would basically drive the guidelines up closer to, if not right at, that 10-year maximum. So in this case, what happened was the probation office did what they normally do. They did a pre-sentence investigation. They made recommendations. They looked at the law. They said the terrorism enhancement applies, and they called for a 10-year sentence. Now, normally what happens is the parties then go to court, tough break for the defense. Maybe not what the government anticipated, but they just deal with it, and the judge sentences to wherever he or she wants, up to 10 years, but with the guidelines nudging the judge towards that higher sentence. In this case, the government, the DOJ, did something completely unusual, very rare from the defense side. I wish it happened more often, maybe, but they decided to renegotiate the case and create an entirely new plea agreement that capped the exposure to 5 years. It did not call for a terrorism enhancement. And then the government said, we're going to ask for 18 to 24 months, which was well below the advisory sentencing guideline range. So yesterday, Ms. Rahman got sentenced to 15 months of imprisonment. And again, imprisonment is not fun. 15 months is serious. But this is a very serious crime when you think about it, and a very interesting process of accommodating a soft deal. You know, you just don't see that too often, particularly in crimes of violence. This is a woman who firebombed a police car, and the Department of Justice just didn't like the fact that she might get more time and worked out this very soft deal. Now, at sentencing, there was a lot to be said. She apparently had no prior criminal history. She said she had character testimony and lawyers indicating that she at least claimed she had been taunted after 9/11 for being a Muslim. So she kind of had some victimhood stories and some character stories to trot out. Meanwhile, the government pointed out she had social media postings on the night of the Molotov cocktail where she's talking about burning everything down, including police stations and maybe even courts. This from a lawyer. So tempering justice with mercy is not an outrageous notion, and maybe that's exactly what's going on in this case. But, again, it's eye-opening. It makes you wonder whether or not different political perspectives are treated differently by this Department of Justice.
Jim, we see trials that go on for weeks, sometimes months, and it all comes down to the jury and the deliberations. And there's a case in Los Angeles that stands out to you about jury deliberations.
Yeah, there's a case going on right now called Danny Masterson. He was an actor on a show called That 70s Show, a very popular show. The trial's in Los Angeles. He's a former actor. And he was charged with raping three different women from 2001 to 2003 in his Hollywood Hills home. Masterson didn't testify. He simply had his lawyer cross-examine the women on their differences about their accounts, particularly over time, since these happened so many years ago. And this week, the jury was out for about 3 days before announcing to the judge with the note that they were deadlocked. And I just thought it'd be worth mentioning a very kind of curious little area of law regarding jury unanimity. You know, our system requires all 12 to agree, or either a guilty or a not guilty. And there is something that came out of this process of jury unanimity called the Allen charge. It was a case called Allen where the judges were told by way of the appellate opinion that it's okay to push the jury towards reaching a verdict, that we don't like mistrials or hung juries. We want to have unanimity. So the original version of the Allen charge was very strong. The judge would bring the jury out after 2 or 3 days of deliberating and tell them how important it was to reach a verdict, and they shouldn't be stubborn. They should listen to their neighbors. I mean, it was a very strong push to try to get them to reach a unanimous decision in either direction. And it typically worked pretty well. But over time, what we've seen is the courts are much more reluctant than they used to be to give that full instruction. So they'll soften it. They'll say, you know, please keep deliberating. Please consider the views. But, of course, stick to your principles. And so it's not really the push in the back it used to be. And what it's led to over time is more holdout jurors or juries hanging the case. And so, remember, if it's a hung jury, it's almost as if it never happened. The prosecutors are not barred by double jeopardy. They can try once again. And we've seen high-profile cases like that. But the watering down of this thing called the Allen charge has really created a national ripple where it's more acceptable and more predictable to see hung juries. So we'll see how Danny Masterson's trial plays out next week. But it's starting to look like they're not going to reach a verdict.
Jim Trustee, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Have a great Thanksgiving, Jim.
Sure thing. You too.
Thank you. 6:58, Saturday morning update. We've got KT McFarland, John Gizzi, Tony Schaefer, and Cheryl Atkinson coming up in the 7 o'clock hour.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.